Thank you for attending session 262 titled, I Go to Two Churches. Before we begin, we'd like you to silence your cell phones. This session is being recorded, and you will be held accountable before your bishop for everything you say. We encourage you to purchase Sunstone merchandise and the audio, or make a donation to Sunstone so I can feed my children. This session is 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep it within that framework. About this presentation, it seems strange to go to another church when you already attend the only true and living church on the face of the earth, but the members of this panel have actually found that supplementing their LDS church going with another religious tradition has enriched their spiritual lives and made them better people. The panelists will be me, Stephen Carter, the director of publications for Sunstone, author of Mormonism for Beginners, and editor of Moth and Rust, Mormon Encounters with Death. We also have Wendy Smith, who is a member of the board of directors for the Mormon Transhumanist Association, and they left off the rest that you sent me, but it's in the program, I promise, Wendy. Gina Colvin, who should have been on the screen but is not, is a research fellow at the University of Canterbury, Christchurch, New Zealand, with an interest in cultural and post-colonial studies. Eric Canfield is a husband, dragon dad, wildflower geek, and a reluctant Mormon who plays bass in a progressive American Baptist praise band. Where's the guitar, Eric? Nuts! Tom Gleason is an accidental gospel doctrine teacher in his ward and an enthusiastic vocalist in the Deborah Bonner Unity Gospel Choir. He also enjoys singing Christian praises at mega churches on the weekends and has recently started his own home-centered praise group. And now we will begin. Since I'm already up here, I guess I'll start. A few weeks ago, a minister at the South Valley Unitarian Universalist Society in Cottonwood Heights, Utah, gave a sermon where he cited something that I had written to him. He didn't use my name, but he described me as an ex-Mormon. I had to correct him the next week. I'm actually not an ex-Mormon, I said. I'm kind of a Unimorm, a Unitarian Mormon. After all, I still go to the LDS church at least once a month. That's wonderful, he said. That means I can say that I had a Mormon friend while I lived in Utah. Out of curiosity, why do you still go? He didn't ask it like that. He was very understanding. It's a tension I feel called to maintain, I said. It's a creative tension, then, he said. Right, I said. And it's true. Attending two different denominations has produced a tension in me, a tension that has been very productive. When I first started attending the South Valley Unitarian congregation, and no, they don't make you say the entire thing so that you don't win for the devil. I was my ward's Sunday school president. It was a calling I took quite seriously. I had started by submitting the names of both males and females to be my counselors, which probably made the branch president question the revelation that landed me in the calling in the first place. I tried to get a balance in the gospel doctrines, the gospel doctrine teachers, men and women, liberal and conservative. I called a married couple to teach the youth class. There was only one youth class, since my two kids made up one quarter of it, so that a male and female perspective could be offered. And I put a lot of work into teaching the teacher training course. I even tried to start a meditation room, where people could just sit quietly and think. Strangely enough, though, that idea turned out to meet even more resistance than the female counselor idea. Then one of my kids revealed to us that she was transgender. As I thought about the best case scenario for continuing to go to our LDS ward, I realized that even if the ward were the model of acceptance and rallied around my daughter, the current of tradition, practice, and doctrine was running against us. I thought of the many awkward social situations. How will the young women feel about her being in their class or bringing her on a camping trip? How would her presence affect the lessons on gender roles, morality, marriage, and motherhood? It would continue with the fact that she wouldn't have any role models. no one like her who was afforded all the spiritual goods the church offers. In fact, she herself would never be offered all of those goods. If she got sex reassignment surgery, she could be disfellowshipped or excommunicated. In other words, though I could see a chance for acceptance in the ward, I couldn't see a chance for flourishing. So we went exploring. I brought her to the Community of Christ congregation in Salt Lake first because I knew they had a transgender member there. I also hoped that she would feel a little more grounded since she would be hearing references to familiar history and theology. We had a good experience, but my daughter really needed a youth group, which wasn't really up and running yet. So we tried the South Valley Unitarian Universalist Society.
Is Tom Kimball in the house? It was Tom who told me to come do this.
He was like, "It's awesome, man." At the beginning of the meeting, a man stood at the pulpit and said a few sentences. "Come, come, whoever you are. You are welcome here. No matter your age, your size, the color of your eyes, your hair, your skin, you are welcome here. No matter whom you love or how you speak or whatever your abilities, you are welcome here. Whether you come with laughter in your heart or tears, you are welcome here. If you come here with an open heart, an open mind, a loving heart, and willing hands, you are welcome here." The words took me completely by surprise. I started to weep without knowing why. Later, I realized that something very close to a miracle had happened in that moment. I knew that I had found a community for my daughter, one that knew how to cultivate her in her uniqueness, one that was unabashedly willing to offer her all of its spiritual resources, holding nothing back. Indeed, another transgender person was already attending the class Layla would go to. But while all this was going on, I was still the Sunday school president. This was partially because through some trick of revelation, the two counselors in the branch presidency happened to be progressive souls and personal friends. They managed me to keep me in my calling despite the branch president's doubts about me. Through a trick of scheduling, I was able to attend the UU congregation and still get to my LDS ward by the beginning of Sunday school. And the thing was, I arrived energized. I'd been bathing in the warmth and open-heartedness of the Unitarians, and my batteries were fully charged. I had a lot to give to my class. I was also fascinated by the differences I saw between the Unitarian congregation and my LDS ward. I saw about 10 times as many cell phones out during sacrament meeting as I did during the Unitarian services. I also heard the differences between the hymnals. "Lean on Me" is a Unitarian hymn. "Blue Boat Home" takes the melody to "In Humility Our Savior" and turns it into a hymn to the earth. The book even features a Buddhist mantra. And I noticed that the Unitarians actually talk about their differences in belief rather than assuming that everyone believes the same thing. This helped me see that the Mormon way is just one approach to doing things. I'd known this intellectually, but now that I was experiencing different modes of meetings, I could suddenly see how to use the structures my class members were expecting in ways that would bring them out of their Mormon shell, so that we could talk together as people. The Unitarians were helping me to be a more vibrant, creative, and I would even argue, spirit-filled teacher. This year of going to two churches was, frankly, the most spiritually productive part of my life. And yes, that includes my mission. But suddenly, the ward got split three ways and everyone lost their callings. They went through a lot of work to get rid of me. I was in a new ward with a bishop I'd never met, with only a third of the people I knew, and I didn't have a calling. Add to that, we were building a house that we would move into a month later. But a sudden light shone when the bishop of my new ward told me during what I thought would be a run-of-the-mill temple recommend interview that the young men and young women wanted to know how they could reach out to Layla. I was astonished and moved by this unexpected offer. So I was as honest as I could be. Here's the obstacle we need to overcome, I said. When the November 2015 policy about the children of gay parents was announced, Layla's Sunday school class, whose teacher I had called, had a discussion about all of it. She got to hear firsthand, with no filters, how her class members felt about people like her. And it really wounded her. Perhaps we could start by discussing those attitudes with the young men and young women, many of whom were in that class, and see what a more Christ-like approach could be. The bishop looked away from me, and an awkward silence ensued. I guess church culture isn't quite ready for that yet, I finally said. And there was another silence. When my daughter had graduated from the Unitarians' religious exploration program and moved out of the house, I realized that I could go back to the LDS church now if I wanted. I could go back to where I knew how to work so well, where my people were. But then I looked around and realized that the Unitarians had been there for me when I needed them, and I felt genuine loyalty toward them. They proved to my daughter that a spiritual community can be a warm and nourishing place, and I was forever grateful for that. I wanted to be around them. I wanted their kindness and non-judgmentalism to rub off on me. So we've been in the boundaries of our new ward for about 2 years now, and I go, as I said, about every month, although I would like to go more often. I want to establish a connection with the members of my ward for a number of reasons, but I think the most potent one is simply the pull to go back home. But I know that I'd have to start at square one, maybe even further back, because now I'll be going in without all the markers of a good Mormon. I won't be there every week. I won't have a family with me. Some of the ward members will doubtless realize that I've been somewhat inactive for 2 years. I just don't know if I'll find a place there like I had in my previous ward. It'll take longer to make friends, and I have no idea what kind of callings they'd be willing to give a guy who only shows up every other week. But, as I told the Unitarian minister, it's a creative tension. I need it to be my best self. And that is why I am a Unimorm. Unitarians too. We don't want to exhaust people, right? Okay.
So I go to two churches. I go to the Brookshire ward of the Grant Stake of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Salt Lake City, or actually in Mill Creek. And I also go to First Baptist of Salt Lake City. And both have been very important on my journey. And I've come to believe that there is not a destination, that it's all journey. And that if there is a Zion, Zion is now. If Zion is somewhere in the future or down the road, then there is no Zion. And I will always be grateful for both of these churches. I grew up Mormon. I had a faith crisis around 5 years ago, which was very painful. A lot of foundations, things that I believed, crumbled. And I had quite a series of existential crises. A lot of anger and grief. And when that happened, I went kind of for my own spiritual needing and trying to keep God alive in my mind, I went to visit a bunch of other churches. And so I think I counted up and I visited about 20 congregations. One Catholic, three Episcopal, two Lutheran, three Presbyterian, two Baptist, three Methodist, Unitarian, Community of Christ, a non-denominational, Quaker, Muslim, and Hare Krishna. And you know, God was in every single one of those. And I came to see how God is so much bigger than I ever thought. And that God can't be contained in one religion. And our one way of looking at God can never be the whole way we look at God, because he's so much bigger than that. So I can write off a lot of things about Mormonism. There's a lot of things that about Mormonism that I used to think were really special that have kind of tarnished for me, and in some have actually become completely corroded. But I can't write it off. And to tell you one of the reasons why, I'll have to tell a story about my dad. So my dad came from a broken home. When he was one, his mom left the family. She was going to leave her abusive alcoholic husband, but that meant she left the whole family, and my dad was only one. He never knew his mom. Then he had a better marriage because he married a woman that could drink as much as he could. And she brought her six kids, and then they had six more. And so he was in a complete knockdown, drag-out situation. And to this day, he hates macaroni because one of the main things that he ate was macaroni and canned milk that the church welfare gave them. It usually lasted halfway through the month where he had to go steal candy bars from the stores. He still likes candy bars, though. And there came a point when one of the sisters ran away and went to the police. And at that point, the family figured out they were in trouble. And so he hauled them all to California. And then eventually, the mom and dad just abandoned the whole family. And my dad's oldest brother, like, tried to hold things together, but eventually people figured it out. And my dad and one of his brothers heard that the Child Protective Services were coming. So when he heard they were coming, he and one of his brothers, they ran away. And they hid out in a culvert for 2 days. Then they came back and didn't know what to do when the house was completely empty and no one was there. But there was a bishop in that area that took those kids in. And this was in a small house. The house was already full, but this was the first time that my dad had seen a functioning, loving family. It was kind of heartbreaking to me to hear a few years ago that my dad has no memory of being loved and especially not cherished as a kid. And he saw how a family could work. A very loving family, and he has such fond memories of that family. Eventually, his aunt and uncle came from Utah, picked him up, and lived with them. And at that point is when this angry teenager was finally taught to read and had a stable life and saw further how a family could be. And the church was there for him. When he got married, that was a big, important thing for him. He loved going to the temple. It gave him so much peace. And he still had anger issues, but I grew up in a loving family, and he gave me what he never got. And I will always be grateful for what the church did for my dad and for my family, because my life is so much better because of that. And I will always be grateful for that. So I'll to go back a little bit when I was visiting other churches. I had been visiting churches for a while, and then my middle kid was questioning their gender. And we said that we let them take a break from church for a while until they kind of figured some stuff out. And then they came out as transgender non-binary. My kid uses they, them pronouns. And so it came pretty clear that Mormon church wasn't going to work out. And there was one heartbreaking comment that Haven, I think, was joking when they said this, but they said, I hate that my existence subverts the plan of salvation. And even though it was said kind of a funny way, it was kind of one of those stab you in the heart things. And I never really noticed how gendered Mormon churches. So I took Haven upon my my church outings. And one time we went to visit a church, an Episcopal church. No, it was a Lutheran church, and the neighbor was there. The neighbor's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "This is our ecumenical week." And so Ecumenical Sunday became the thing that we did. And after a while, we really wanted Haven to have a community and have a spiritual base and something to support them as they were in their life. And we said, well, why don't you pick one? And Haven picked the First Baptist Church. Now, I have to give one disclaimer. Baptist was like one of the last ones I visited because I had the association of Southern Baptists, which are very, very conservative and some of them kind of homophobic. But the American Baptist is completely different. They're completely affirming, and actually they're kind of over the top sometimes. They actually have a booth at Pride, and the pastor goes around praying with people at the Pride Festival. So this was actually not my top choice of churches. But I think it's turned out to be the best choice for Haven and actually for our whole family. We kind of felt like spiritual refugees in a way, and they completely took us in. We were foreigners, and they let us in, and we were hungry, and they fed us. They even changed the signs on the bathrooms to be gender inclusive. They tried so hard to use they/them pronouns. And it's hard. And more of all, it's a place where I can be myself. And I can be all of myself there. They accept all of me. They don't expect me to believe a certain way, to act a certain way. And they've had no expectations, no requirements for me at all. And they invited me to play bass guitar with their little Jesus praise band, which is the most hilarious thing ever, and it is so much fun. Haven went to their Baptist camp just this last month, and they had a really rough year, and I picked them up, and the pastor told me how Haven was singing and playing with all the other kids there, and if it had been for that week only, I would forever be for grateful for the Baptist Church. But they have been so much more. And just Sunday, when the hymn we sung, the pastor told us his grandpa's favorite hymn was "What a Friend We Have in Jesus," and this Baptist hymn, you will probably recognize the melody, and I can't help but the Mormonism always sneaks in there, but this is how it goes. What a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything in God in prayer. Come to Zion, come to Zion, where we all our sorrows share. Come to Zion, come to Zion, we will find a solace there. Thank you.
Going to two churches, and more than two at times, and fewer than two at times, has been a dynamic process. Some of my reasons in the beginning are not necessarily my reasons now. And some of the churches I started with are not the churches I've ended with. First, I go to two churches so that my partner would attend with me, so that my spouse would attend with me. My husband, Chad, stopped attending the LDS Church in 2007, 12 years ago. We had a newborn and a two-year-old at the time, and I kept going with our babies for 5.5 years on my own, and I would plead with Chad to come with me. Sometimes tearfully, I would beg him to attend a sacrament meeting with me. I didn't care what he believed, nor was I worried about our eternal family. Mostly, I felt abandoned sitting in the back row by myself. Church was something we'd always done together, and it felt like a break in our we-ness, and it hurt to have my bids denied. I also felt like a second-class citizen. I realized how much I felt this way when the first words that came out of my mouth were, "My husband is inactive." I said this to the mother of a new family in our ward when she introduced herself to me for the first time after church one Sunday. It was as if I wanted to get that information out there right up front in case it would pose a barrier to our friendship. And incidentally, that woman is my best friend today and an active Mormon. So there I was, going to church for over 5 years by myself, and then one day in 2013, I said to Chad, "If you won't go with me to the Mormon church, what church will you go to?" And now this is before the famous talk, "Where will you go?" And that day was a breakthrough. After that, Chad started to go back to the LDS church, plus we started to attend other churches on occasion. But then in 2014, something big happened. We were silenced in our LDS ward, and that's another story for another time, but it was a painful experience for me, and it showed me an ugly side of the church that I'd never seen before. Part of being silenced included being released as a visiting teacher, and this broke my heart. It was at that time that I decided to whittle down my LDS participation to just sacrament meeting and ward socials and activities. So being silenced was my next reason that I attend two churches. A third reason is to commune with my neighbors. One reason I kept going to church all those years, and even after being silenced in 2014, was simply that I valued that communion with my neighbors. To me, the LDS church, right across the street, it was your town square, like in old European villages. It's where you would go to commune with your neighbors. It's where you renewed your bonds of friendship. And I don't mean like in a social, superficial way. I mean in that way that you build trust with people. And I wanted to commune with my neighbors. And when I say neighbors, I meant those people living in that very close proximity with me. And the LDS church building is the official place to do that. It's right across the street. It's where the majority of your neighbors go. And in addition to that, I generally admire Mormon people. I am biased because most of the people I know are Mormon, but they're some of the very best people that I know. And so I would say there was also something else going inside of me that I would call a loyalty struggle, because one of the analogies I used to use in talking about my relationship with the church was that it was like a marriage. And I remember saying, "You don't just bail out when you fall on hard times." And I had made a commitment. And to further the marriage analogy, receiving my endowment was like marrying the church. And I had now discovered that the church was an imperfect partner, but you don't just abandon your partner. Spoiler alert, I would later view the church as an abusive partner. Fourth reason I attend two churches is so that my children could gain diversity exposure, support, and a true religious education. I wanted church to play an important role for my children. One formative book I read in 2015 was Parenting Beyond Belief. And like most parents, I wanted my children to develop an internal code of ethics. Ethics that remained after dogma was stripped away. Ethics that remained after belief changed. And this was not something that was to be handed to them and memorized. It was something they had to explore, they had to find, and they had to adopt for themselves. And I felt the best way they could do this is to expose them, kind of like that tension that Stephen was talking about. When you're presented with a tension, it makes you struggle to reconcile things. It makes you struggle to say, what do I actually believe? What is actually meaningful for me? What values do I actually adopt for myself? And so while some people would say, wouldn't it confuse your children to go to two churches? Chad and I thought very much the opposite. And we felt like the important thing to give them was a foundation of parents who loved them and supported them while they explored, and who loved them for who they are, not what they believe. And so now I'm going to tell you what I found. Let me tell you where we started. So it was probably in the summer of 2014 when I first attended Sunstone, and my mind was just blown open, walking up and down the hall, seeing all the different types of Mormons, from the polygamists to progressive Mormons. And I know the Community of Christ don't refer to themselves as the Mormons, but they were some of those progressive Mormons that had a huge influence on me. All of these individuals had grown out of the Restoration Movement, and I was seeing more than one way to Mormon before it was a Sunstone thing. And so, as is the tradition, Community of Christ invited Sunstone attendees to church on Sunday after Sunstone, and Chad and I attended. And my mind was blown even further open at Community of Christ. And it was there, I saw their financial transparency. On the tithing slip, I could indicate where I wanted my tithes to go during church. They handed me a copy of their financials, and they even invited me to help with their financials. I saw their new scripture. Their DNC had more passages than my LDS edition, and new scriptures were being added every 3 years at World Conference. This felt like continuing revelation. There, women were passing the sacrament, baptizing, even being ordained and serving as general authorities. I saw them with my own eyes, my girl saw them, and we would never be the same. There was room to disagree with church policy, beliefs, principles, and positions. It was formalized in a document called Faithful Disagreement. There was World Conference where delegates from across the world gathered every 3 years, where new revelation was voted on. Yes, voted on. Members were called to be a prophetic people. This felt like common consent. In fact, I was ready to fly to Independence, Missouri just to see it for myself. Chad thought I was a little insane. Instead, I had to settle for John Hamer answering my whole pile of questions, which was amazing. And John's in the back. I'm so glad you're here, John. So here's what I was seeing. This was the same restoration. This was the same Joseph Smith. It was the same Book of Mormon. It was the same Living Prophet of God model. This was Emma's church. They had embraced difficult church history back in the 70s. And they had ordained women in 1984. They were repenting of their institutional sins. What? Institutional repentance? The things they were doing just felt like a better way to me. Chad would often tell our story about being silenced in our ward, and we would receive advice from faithful LDS friends and family. And the advice they would give us was, wait it out. Wait till you have a different bishop. Wait till you have a different stake president. What happened to you was not right. But something inside me said, it will be too late, because I had seen a better way. So soon after, we also explored the UU Church. And when I say UU Church or Unitarian Church, I'm referring to the Congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Society. And I attend the same one that Stephen goes to, UU in Cottonwood Heights. The UU Church felt uncomfortably unstructured at first. However, one very specific program drew my attention and Chad's attention, and it's the OWL program, and it stands for Our Whole Lives, and it's a nationally recognized comprehensive sexuality education course, and this is something that we knew we wanted for our children, and we enrolled them. Like the Community of Christ, the UU Church gave us transparency and democracy, as well as full inclusion for women, LGBT, and other minorities. In fact, nearly one-third of South Valley UU congregants identify as LGBT. And I intentionally wanted this kind of diversity and exposure for our children. But the inclusion felt even more radical here, with atheists being celebrated equally alongside believers, with Christianity being one source to draw from, not elevated above others. You use draw wisdom from all world religions, earth-centered traditions, from humanist teachings of science, reason, and direct experience, and from, quote, the words and deeds of prophetic men and women who challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. And that's from the UU Six Sources. One program offered by the UU that Chad and I have been eagerly awaiting is their religious education course for 8th and 9th graders, which includes field trips to other churches and faith communities each week over a series of weeks. In UU worship services, you can almost always tell what time of year it is. On Martin Luther King Sunday, you will be talking about civil rights. In UU worship services, you'll hear poetry from Rumi, Mary Oliver, Thoreau, and others. Sermons address difficult local and global events and issues, help form meaning out of the chaos, and call us to action. I cannot go to the UU church without hearing what is happening in the world and community, and I love this. In the UU church, I've learned activism as a form of worship, and I cherish this. Being called to stand for others in church, this is something that I want for myself and for my children. In the UU church, there is a radical support for individual journey, wherever that journey may lead. Let's try not to drop anything. Sorry about that. Yeah. In the UU church, there's nothing that can help me grow or my children grow that is off limits. I'm comforted and stretched here. I have a voice here. So finally, I attend 2 churches foremost because one is the church of my origin and ancestry and what made me much of who I am, and the other is the church of my choice. I'll conclude with words from probably the most well-loved UU hymn. It's kind of the equivalent of I'm a Child of God for Mormons. From Spirit of Life, roots hold me close, wings set me free. Spirit of Life, come to me, come to me. LDS Mormonism is my roots, Unitarianism is my wings. I don't have to choose between these identities. I can embrace them both and be whole and free.
I'm going. Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Gleason, and you're not? Okay. So to start, I wish I could roam. I want to roam. I'm a roamer. There we go. Okay, we're going to roam real quick. So mine is a journey. This is a journey of attending churches. And I have to tell you where it started, or it has no meaning, I think. I experienced a very serious traumatic event in my life several years ago. We probably have all been through stuff. We all know there are things in life that get our attention and cause us to make changes and seek help, seek healing. That was my case. I wanted healing more than anything. I wanted the power to be able to forgive people, the power to love myself and love others, regardless if they never even knew I was forgiving them. I've been in the church my whole life. I'm 54. Temple, children, wife, mission. And then 2010, all that, I'm still married, but all of that was very challenged. And my whole thinking changed towards my God and Christ. So with that, as I wanted to heal, I sought out attending my church meetings like hardcore all the time, going to all my classes. I even hooked up the Mormon channel to my phone when I'd go running so I could hear all the conference talks. I could hear everybody speaking words of wisdom and words to help me. I also heard a lot of interviews with people, and I also heard a lot of music on the Mormon channel. And I got very interested in music from that point on. I started listening to a lot of hymns. I gravitated towards our hymn book in a way I had never done before. I've always loved music. We have a lot of music in our family, and I started to look at these hymns, not as the songs we're singing, but the words on the page that were suddenly going into my heart, and I felt a transformation occurring. But it was short-lived. What's interesting is, at the same time, I had a shift, another shift. When I came to church one day, I looked into our chapel, and I saw our elders' quorum meeting, gathering for elders' quorum, and it no longer looked familiar to me. It no longer matched my inside. It was foreign to me, and it didn't work. What was going on there? Last thing I needed. And so what I did is I continued looking for things that would help me continue to grow in my journey. And I almost felt like the church was this stepping stone to take me somewhere else, if that makes sense. And I felt myself just kind of going off. Not off the rails, just taking flight and going where this thing was taking me. And I was very, very conscious of it, very present. Oh, I went to the Buddhist too. I did Eckhart Tolle. I did the whole thing. I got very, very right now and shut everything out. So where does this leave us in the story? This is interesting. I became very fixated on music and started to recognize that our music in our ward looked like we were dying. Sounds like we're dying in there. I love the hymns, but I don't think we love them like they were loved in 1800, the hymnal movement. The music, I started to go, that doesn't sound like me. That doesn't, I mean, I'd gone past those hymns and on the pages. Then I find out my family's listening to K-Love. I hear all this Christian music playing in the car. And I hear these stories on these songs. I hear this healing in these songs. And I'm going, who are those people? I didn't know who Chris Tolman was. I didn't know who Lauren Daigle. I didn't know who any of these people were. But I heard this wonderful message through these songs. And so basically I just kept going. And one day I just said, oh, I got Spotify. I'm going to pull up a list of, I wonder what the Catholics sound like list. And I pulled up a list, gave me all these songs, supposedly are sung by the Catholics. I couldn't confirm it. But then I go, what do the Baptists sound like? What do the Lutherans sound like? I just started opening up my head and just my mind and saying, I want to know what everybody sounds like when they're singing. I'm already three. Oh, you're cutting me off early. Okay, so basically, that led me to say, whatever this is we're doing in our ward, this is not working in our worship. And I realized, I don't know if we know how to worship. And I sought out churches to go worship in. The first church I went to on recommendation was Calvary Baptist. And I went to Christmas, and it was so awesome. I went back the next year and even saw their choir, and I said, oh, I've got to join that choir. I don't know how that's going to work out, but I'm going to join that choir one day. And then I started attending the Rock Church in Draper. Went there for about a year. Even went to their men's group on a weekly basis and would pray with their men and have worship with the men and support the men. And so I was having this Christian, this evangelical thing going on. And I was loving the way they had their music going. They had all the words on the screen. Everybody's up praising, everybody's worshiping, everybody's engaged and alive. And then I'd go back to my ward. Oh. But it's okay because I've come from a very positive place and I'm going to be okay. Anyway, so I continued journeying to the point where when I go on trips, I started going to other mega churches. I hit Joel Osteen's church in Houston with the Lakewood, met him. I went all over. I went with my sister to a church next to her church, to an evangelical church there in Austin. And then I kind of settled on Center Point in Orem and even called up Gina one day and said, when you fly out here next time, let's go to church together. So we went to church and praised together. It was awesome. And I went to Las Vegas once to another mega church there, and out of nowhere they had this young girl come up and give her story about being shot at the MGM Grand Hotel shootout and how she survived and how she recovered. And I mean, I was just like, wow, there's so much out here. There's so many stories to be told. These people are so real. So takeaways from this, because I know my time's short. What I have tried to do in all of this is take back what I'm learning and what I'm gaining personally, rather than walking out my Mormon ward door, is come back and bring some of these elements, some of these experiences. My Elders Quorum president even told me a month ago, or said, hey, you know what? We want you here, and we want you to bring all this stuff back that you're getting from these churches. Please bring it and share it. But you know what? It's so hard sometimes. I love these people in my ward. But I don't love the way that we are doing it. It seems dead to me. It seems lost. And I don't want to be negative, but I just want to bring life rather than walk out and take my life and take the life with it, the energy out the door, and they can just go, well, there goes another one that wanted to go off and do something else. So I'm not going anywhere, at least right now. So I want to close with this. I bore my testimony in my ward. My ward was having a really rough day in all the testimonies, and they were very sad, as it can be some Sundays. People are going through stuff, and I love it that we're like, oh, good, they're being vulnerable. All right. It's not all about I know. It's just like I'm suffering. I got up, and I said, I can feel the room is very sad today, brothers and sisters. And, you know, God loves us and cares for us. Don't forget that. He's with us. And I feel a song coming on. Turn to my bishopric. Yeah, you know, they're like, oh, please help us. And I said, I'm going to sing this song. It's called Come As You Are. It's not a Nirvana song, but I'll just sing a snippet. It goes like this. Come as you are and bring every burden. Come as you are and all your shame. Come as you are, I know you're hurting. But when you call upon his name, surrender, never be the same. And I closed the meeting with that. And then I saw the heads go up. I saw the heads go down. And I saw the eyes looking at me with tears in their eyes. And it was a connection that I probably won't be able to do again in church because my wife warned me not to do it again. So with that, I just want to just say that the last statement I'm making really quick, it's right here, is I have a sing-along, pray, get your praise on sing-along singing group. We join in my house once a month, and we take advantage of that third hour. And I invite people to come over and sing with us and put music on. I get out your phones and you look up the lyrics and we sing along with the tracks. They're usually Christian songs. So that's something that I've also taken away from it. But that song pretty much sums up how I feel about my journey as I surrender to wherever and to whomever it takes me to. Thanks so much, you guys, for letting me share.
Hello?
We can hear you. Okay, now I'm going to.
Does it sound okay?
Yeah, sounds good.
We can hear you.
But does it sound okay? Because I don't want it to sound bad.
It sounds awesome.
Okay, good. Then I'll speak. But I only have a couple of minutes, right?
You can have all the time you want, Gina. You're talking to us from millions of miles away. Okay, everybody can see your face now.
Oh, hello.
Oh, you can't? Oh, I touched the screen. Talk, Gina.
Okay, can you see me? Do I look okay? It's my birthday, so I'm feeling pretty confident.
Okay, go for it, Gina.
Okay, So in a couple of minutes, the reality is, and I probably have never been this explicit about it, I was percolated concurrently in a number of religious and spiritual traditions right from my early years. So my father and his family gave me a Maori expression of Mormonism. My mother gave me her white working class expression of Mormonism. My mother's parents were staunch Protestant, Salvation Army, and Anglican. My stepfather was Irish Catholic. My first set of substitute parents were Dutch immigrants who were evangelical Reformed Baptists. And my second set of substitute parents were a Seattle-born BYU graduate American who was married to a Mormon convert from Nottingham who was the son of a Presbyterian minister and a Cambridge graduate. So that's sort of like the first 16 years of my life percolated in this really rich environment. And so my first memories of church were the parquet floor tiles and the Fendleton Road LDS meeting house and the wooden floorboards of the Linwood Baptist Church, all on the same day, morning and afternoon or evening. And then with the introduction of Catholicism when I was 16, it added a whole new sensory experience and language of nuns and mass and priests. But humming away in the background is this Maori world view, which was kept alive by my Maori Mormon family, my extended family, who, as it happens, didn't drop many of their traditions and because they were Mormon. You were allowed to do it back then. You're allowed to be syncretic. And then when I made a commitment to be Mormon exclusively, I did so in a third culture household where my American foster mother experienced the LDS church in quite a different way than my English foster father. But really, all of that formed a flexibility in my worldview. And when my gradual departure from an exclusive, adherent Mormon life came about, I did the most natural thing in the world. And I started returning to my formative traditions, Anglo-Catholic, Evangelical, Restoration, and I began harvesting all of their wisdoms concurrently. Because I think the reality is, it's not the church that matters as much as the spiritual life it's supporting. And it doesn't matter as much as the collective integrity of the community it's creating. I've since very happily and surprisingly landed with Community of Christ, but I continue to worship with my local Anglican community and my online Community of Christ family, but support a Mormon household where there's mutual and seminary and family home evening and a husband who serves in a stake calling. So I consider each of these paradoxical and contradictory pathways to be a blessing. And I think, and I'll finish here, like friends, these traditions warmly and tenderly invite us into their lovely web of sacred words and spiritual practices and narratives. And in their own languages, each of these traditions tell us in their own way about our gradual becoming. And they hint at this cosmic grandness of which we're all a part of. And they remind us that we were made for more than that just this pedestrian ramble through life. So I think it's worth not placing harsh and thick lines of definition and dogma around our religious traditions, because I think if we sit quietly with what's going on here, it's not, as I said before, about church as much as it's being quiet enough to find bubbling beneath the surface what our needs are, what our spiritual needs are, and going towards where those needs will be honored with integrity and care. So that's me with 1 minute to go.
To go. Shall we just stop while the spirit's strong?
Before we ruin it?
I don't know. If anybody has a question, it has to be a really fast one that requires 3 words to answer. No one's taking it up. Okay, that was our show. Thanks, everyone. That was great.